the book that we are now going to be talking about and the author we are now going to be interviewing. Timothy Schwartz has been living, researching, and working in Haiti in the Dominican Republic for the past 27 years. His first book, entitled Travesty in Haiti, A True Account of Christian Missions, Orphanages, Fraud, Food Aid, and Drug Trafficking, caused a sensation among the humanitarian aid workers and journalists who work around Haiti by laying out the lies, greed, and bluff behind many purportedly altruistic projects. He has followed it up with the Great Haiti Humanitarian Aid Swindle, in which he takes down the likes of Anderson Cooper, Bill and Hillary Clinton, UNICEF, Save the Children, and a host of other do-gooders, supposedly. Tim lays out the numbers and names the names of the humanitarian aid bluffers, con artists, ingenue, and their media facilitators. He pulls no punches. Tim Schwartz, welcome to Lambicol.
Thanks for having me.
We are watching the heart-wrenching situation in Puerto Rico today and cannot but be reminded of the parallels with the powerful earthquake in Haiti 7 years ago. Have we learned any lessons, or are we seeing much of the same?
Well, apparently we haven't learned any lessons. But the thing that's so interesting about Puerto Rico versus Haiti is it's American. It's it's part of the American government. It's under our control, and they're still not capable of delivering effective aid, obviously. Mm-hmm. And so maybe we'll learn some lessons from this one. But at the same time, I mean, it's for me, for somebody who's spent most of their adult life in Haiti and who studies the problem in Haiti, the outcry over Puerto Rico, I mean, it's terrible. It's sad. People have died. When you look at the situation, you compare it to Haiti, Puerto Rico, even now in this crisis, is it's like this in Haiti every day. I mean, we hear, I was just reading, they had 16 deaths in Puerto Rico that they attributed to the storm. And then a journalist, a more thorough journalist, called all the hospitals, all 69 of Puerto Rico's hospitals, and came up with a figure of 60 deaths attributed to the storm.
Wow.
60 deaths in 2 weeks. We have 60 deaths every day in Haiti attributed to poor hospital conditions, if not more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they talk about the Puerto Rico situation. Again, it's sad. It's a disaster, and I hope they get it together as soon as possible. When you think about it in the context of Haiti, they say half of Puerto Rico doesn't have potable water still. Half of Haiti doesn't have potable water all the time. In fact, more. Mm-hmm. People all over Haiti are walking miles. You know, again, I don't want to downplay the importance of the crisis in Puerto Rico, but when you live in Haiti and you look at Haiti, I mean, Puerto Rico's 40 miles wide. The average rural Haitian might walk 40 miles to get to the nearest market. The average rural Haitian market woman walks 40 miles a day. They mm-hmm. were... If this was Haiti, they would walk and get the water.
Yeah.
Anyway, I should say something about the book, maybe.
Yes.
It in the context.
Yeah. Please. You really start the book after the earthquake 7 years ago. You were in Dominican Republic and came over. Give us an idea of what you saw, what you felt as you drove into Haiti that day, January 11th. I guess
yeah.
It was 2010.
And I guess I should point out to me, this, relating it to Puerto Rico, it was my first experience in a disaster like this. And I arrived with a U.S. diplomat, you know, I happened to be with one in a high-ranking foreign service official, U.S. foreign service official. I was in the Dominican Republic with him, so I came back within, we got into Haiti at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. And this was my first experience in a disaster like that. And because of my contact with the embassy and with this official, I was with the first responders, as they call them. You know, these right. guys that come in to save people from the buildings, and you know, we hear about them in Puerto Rico to deliver the aid. And I spent the first 3 days with them. And again, Puerto Rico sort of brings up the failures that we experienced in those 3 days. I mean, it was, and I begin the book with articulating these experiences where they didn't coordinate with the locals. These were the rescuers I was with Fairfax Rescue Crew, who was supposed to be some of the best in the United States, and they simply had no idea how to function in a foreign environment. Zero. And they didn't adapt either. In fact, they resisted. And they focused. This is something that was lurking behind the great Haitian rescue effort. They came to help Americans and to look for Americans. And that became very apparent. And if for those who were paying attention, those on the ground, even American officials were outraged about what they saw.
What was the code word Broken Arrow?
Okay, it was a particular situation. It was within 48 hours of the earthquake, and we had stumbled. I was with the Fairfax rescuers in my own truck because theirs broke down. Their embassy supplied vehicle had broken down. So we went to the nurses' school. We found ourselves at the Haitian College of Nursing, and it had collapsed, and there was some 210 young women trapped inside, or many of them sure died when the building collapsed. But people there had been talking to some of them, so they knew that people were alive in the building. And when we got there, I spoke to the crowd. Everything was fine. The crowd was under control. But the chief of the rescue team that we were with was having an entirely different experience and basically panicked. And the crowd, he was afraid of the crowd. He was afraid of Haiti. And a lot of this is analyzing the book, is because of what people hear about Haiti, what the press has been telling us. And they were telling us during the earthquake relief effort too, that gangs were taking over the street, machete wielding bands of young men with their faces hidden behind bandanas. You know, if you read the newspaper articles from that time, the press created a picture of complete Armageddon. Mm-hmm. In the end, what we know is that less people died from murder and violence in the 2 weeks after the earthquake than die on a weekend in Washington, D.C.
Right.
And you saw the same similar sort of inflation of just about everything, but regarding the press, just this wild exaggeration, sort of selling these stories about Haiti, the rapes, you know, they claimed that there were dozens of rapes daily, and that there were bands of young men roaming the camps, raping people. They claimed that there were 1.5 million orphaned and separated children. They told us that, major newspapers, that there were bands of perverts, networks of child slave traders that were hunting the children down. I mean, the stories go on and on. And these are major newspapers claiming wild figures, 1.5 million orphaned or lost children. Mm-hmm. There were only 3 million people in the earthquake strike zone.
Mm-hmm.
And
in the end, it was, about 100 children had been orphaned.
You know, in the end, the funny thing is, for all the efforts and the 291 million that UNICEF alone collected, nobody knows how many there were.
Yeah.
But to give you an idea of that, we know that there probably wasn't more than 1,000 orphans. How many of those needed UNICEF's help? We don't know. But 10 weeks after the earthquake, UNICEF had only reunified 20 children. Meanwhile, there were 291 million. Yeah.
We're listening to WBI in fundraising mode. This is Lambi Call. And I just wanted to strengthen the parallel between Haiti and Puerto Rico through Mr. Trump's proclamation. It's a very crude and vulgar repeat of Kipling's White Man's Burden, where the imperialists have to belittle and humiliate the people they are supposedly helping. And in this case, in the case of Puerto Rico, we're talking about American citizens being qualified as they. And of course they are lazy, and of course they are helpless, and of course they are incompetent. And it's the same thing that you were trying to, you were saying with Haiti, with the machetes wielding band and all of this, and orphans and chaos. While the world was seeing the spontaneous organization of the Haitian people to rescue and secure a better environment. It was incredible what Mr. Trump did by insulting the mayor and the Puerto Rican populace.
And we're speaking with Tim Schwartz, the author of The Great Haiti Humanitarian Aid Swindle. He has lived and worked in Haiti for 27 years and has basically put out what is happening behind the scenes of this humanitarian aid machine, the humanitarian sector being the eighth largest economy in the world. And we're asking you.
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
that's incredible.
You learn so many things in this book, Roger. It's just Tim is gone. He's a statistic machine, putting it on page after page with these incredible stories and anecdotes of what he experienced firsthand, as he just gave us a little taste of there. That's nothing. That's nothing compared to just these. This rich tapestry of experience and truth that is woven together in this book. And you can have it, an autographed copy by Tim Schwartz, who...
by calling 516-620-3602. Please lend a hand to WBAI, to Pacifica. This is part of a network of indispensable alternative forums to bring you the news that you and the consideration and the analysis that you would not have by listening and watching other media, so-called MSM, mainstream media.
$50, and we know everybody's tired. It is people are suffering from fundraising fatigue. We are constantly doing it. We are under incredible pressure with the Empire State Building threatening to evict our antenna, and of course we're mobilizing for that, but we have to keep it going. And this, the fact that Tim is here live tonight to join us to talk about this book, which is so important, especially with what's going on in Puerto Rico, especially with the storms that are coming. It's not over yet. And we need to understand what this humanitarian aid, with its mainstream media accomplices, are doing in Haiti and other countries. The false pictures they're giving. Right now, he talked about the undercount that they're doing in Puerto Rico, saying 16 and it's 60, according to some journalists' count. And in Haiti, of course, and Tim was the one that uncovered it, they said it was 312,000, when in fact it was between 45 and 86,000, according to his statistical analysis, not just something hatched. So this is the kind of truth you'll get in this book, The Great Humanitarian Aid Swindle, 516-620-3602.
Please
call now. You'll be helping this program. And if you are one of the regular listeners to this Haiti show, which is the only English show on Haiti in the New York City area, you will appreciate this book.
This book. And you will help WBAI, at the forefront of alternative media, giving you news and analysis.
Okay. 516-620-3602. Let's go back to Tim Schwartz. We keep taking little breaks, but again, you are listening to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York and streaming live on WBAI.org. That's our half-hour station identification. Tim, give us a little more background on this question of orphans. You said that the agencies and press were trumpeting that there were 1 million in Haiti after the earthquake. But talk a little about also how many orphans aren't even orphans.
Well, Haiti has this. I get into this in one of the chapters in the book. After the earthquake, they were claiming. It was Save the Children who got it started, and they were citing UNICEF. There were 1 to 2 million orphaned, separated or lost children, or children separated from their families. And this, was in the biggest newspapers on earth. It was out on the AP Wire, and published in London and Paris and U.S. And, of course, it helped drive the donations. The NGOs were feeding this information to the press, and then they began to tell stories about networks of slave traders and people scooping up the children from the street. So it helped drive the donations. Now, you know, I'm not saying they sat down and planned this out, but it was opportunistically, these are the things that they would feed to the press, and the press, getting readership for it, repeated it. In the case of, you know, what you got in the end with stories like that was this massive amounts of money that flowed in. The UNICEF had started by asking for $10 million to help the children in Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
In a week they got that. And they upped it to $100 million, and then they got that within a couple months, and then they upped it another $127 million. In the end, UNICEF got $291 million to help the children of Haiti. And of course, the ultimate crime. I mean, okay, if you tell a little lie in order to help children, okay, maybe you could be forgiven, right? I mean, it's a noble thing. Haitian children have a lot of needs. We have a lot of poor children in Haiti. But the real ultimate crime is what happened to the money, because that money's gone now. And what did UNICEF do for the children? Most of what UNICEF did was try to influence legal laws in Haiti, particularly one of the things they were most proud of, the laws they promoted, was to criminalize the Restavek system. So they started funding the Haitian Child Welfare Bureau, IBCER, and they pushed them, by funding them, they were literally paying their salaries, and they pushed them to promote a law that said that anybody who gave their child to another family without going through the legal channels was a criminal. So the mothers and anybody who took that child in was a criminal. So what you have is a case of Haiti, this impoverished country where you have a lot of rural children desperate for education, and they go stay with people in the city. Okay, in some cases, we all, you know, people who follow Haiti have heard about the Restavek, the abuse, and of course there's some abuse. Whenever you have vulnerable people, situations where, like this, there's abuse, but for the vast majority of children in Haiti, or for a large minority of children in Haiti, it's the only way out of the rural areas and to get an education, and that's to go live with another family. Anyway, UNICEF succeeded in criminalizing it. Mm-hmm. That's just one example. Let me give you just, because there's a list of things that, you know, when I look at what's happening in Puerto Rico, and I reflect on my experiences in Haiti and studying these issues, it's almost impossible to know what's going on. It's almost impossible to believe. You know, I was listening to the mayor or the governor of Puerto Rico talk about how people are dying. She's literally saying, we're dying here. It was in the front page. We're dying here in Puerto Rico. You're dying in Puerto Rico? Oh, you've got a crisis in Puerto Rico. But like we just said, okay, worst case, we've got 60 deaths in Puerto Rico. In Haiti, they claimed 316. Okay, it was 50 to 80,000. 50 to 80,000 people died. That's an enormous amount of people. When you look at Puerto Rico, again, I don't want to belittle their situation, but 60 people died? Anyway, let me give you a quick reflection on the numbers and just how bad or how extreme the exaggeration was. For example, the first thing they told us, this was the U.S. government with all their technology at their disposal, 70 to 80% of all homes had been destroyed in Port-au-Prince. AWACS, you know, radar planes, advanced military technology to estimate the rubble. What was the real figure? 7% had collapsed. 22% were recommended for demolition. We knew this after, within a year, all the houses had been evaluated. They knew that 22% should be demolished. 64% of them would never be demolished, but would be reoccupied. They told us that there were 30 million cubic meters of rubble, and the U.S. government paid contractors, U.S. contractors, to clean that rubble up. Haitian bourgeois, some of them, you know, like Gilbert Bisio and some of the then First Lady, Elizabeth Delatour Proval, was in on it. They all got...
We lost you for a minute there, Tim? Tim, we got you. Okay.
Off.
No, we got you. Yeah, your phone position changed briefly. Yeah, after Elizabeth Delatour, pick it up.
Yeah, okay. So these wealthy Haitian connected business people partnered with U.S. contractors to clean up this estimated 30 million cubic meters of rubble. U.S. said, Army engineers told us 30 million cubic meters. How much was it? It was no more than 3.5 million cubic meters, one-tenth of the figure. Wow. But we paid to clean it up. How many people? Okay, there was the death count, which we touched on. They told us there were 316,000 dead. What we know from the studies of, you know, not only the study that I was involved in, but from calling businesses and finding out the numbers of employees of NGOs and U.S. citizens, Dominican citizens, it was about 50 to 60,000 dead, which, again, is a lot of people. It was a massive crisis. The point is the exaggeration of these statistics. They told us that 30% of all Haitian civil servants were dead. The real figure, about 1%. They told us that there were 2.3 million IDPs. That's people who were displaced.
Internally displaced people.
Mm-hmm. Right, internally displaced people, and they collected money for them to help them. Mm-hmm. How many people were really displaced? It couldn't possibly have been 2.3 million. There was only 3 million people in the area. They told us that 1.5 million were in the camps. What we know from studies that I did was, in the end, about 1 in 20 people who were in the camps came from destroyed houses. Again, this isn't to denigrate those people or to say that there's anything wrong with having gone to the camp. Haiti is an ongoing crisis. And you can argue, and I talk about this in the book, we've basically destroyed the Haitian economy, whether it was intentional or whether it was not. The U.S. involvement and the NGOs have destroyed the Haitian agriculture economy. They participated in destroying the artisanal economy. And what's left is the NGO economy. You want
to
be a part
on
of
On this
it?
Note, Tim Schwartz, we have to take a quick pause and remind people that we are in fundraising mode. And we know some of them are impatient to go to the phone and call 516-620-3602 to show their support, indispensable support for the essential WBAI, which is bringing us all the time the essential before the other media who are better resourced.
516-620-3602. This is Tim Schwartz, Dr. Tim Schwartz, the Great Haiti Humanitarian Aid Swindle. $50. $50. Come on, people. You spend this, every week on coffees at Starbucks at $5 a pop. You can easily do this, and despite the tremendous fatigue you are feeling from these repeated fund drives, we need to keep this station alive, and you need to read this book. It's not, Tim has gone to great effort to, one, write this book. He's providing the station with the book, autographed copies, for free to support the station. So you owe it to Tim Schwartz, you and owe it to yourself, and you owe it to WBAI
to call 516-620-3602. Please do your part. You're part of the community, part of the progressive community, the community that listens to WBAI. You know very well, especially these days, that if you do not have alternative media in a world of natural disasters, in a world where North Korea and the United States are at each other's rhetorical throats, if you don't have a place where you have to listen to the Syrian situation, to the situation in the Ukraine, if you do not have alternative media like WBAI and like Pacifica, which are parts of a network, a wide network of some places that you don't even hear about in the mainstream media, places where WBAI will take you. So you can further your knowledge about not only news, but analysis. Please send
620-3602. And Roger, I just came back from Winnipeg, where I was at a conference on revolutions, and there was a lot of talk about what's going on in Venezuela today, and the way they twist the news. They put up a picture of a woman in front of soldiers saying it's Venezuela. It's not. It's Argentina. They put a picture of babies in hampers and say that's the hospital. It wasn't. It was Honduras. This goes on and on. So you need stations like this to set the record straight, to tell the true story. people like Tim Schwartz who have gone in and done the digging and found the real numbers, found the real story, and has lived in
digging.
Haiti can tell
We're talking about depth of analysis.
Depth of analysis.
We're not talking about things that you pick up. You hearing all the scandals about Twitter, about Google, about Facebook, about how they not only are being manipulated by certain individuals, but certain entities and sometimes governments who are telling them, you have to put this out or you cannot put this out.
Right.
I mean, it's all over the news. So don't tell me just because you have your latest Apple 8 that you think you have the world at your fingertips, you understand everything. You have to listen to WBAI and Pacifica and others, part of the network of progressive alternative news.
Okay, so we did our one more pitch there, 516-620-3602. Please keep calling in while we continue to talk to Tim Schwartz. Tim, back to you. I think Roger had another question or two for you, but I'll just slip in here. Talk to us a little bit about the rape epidemic, the hordes of sex-crazed men who ravaged the camps, and women who couldn't sleep because they just were being repeatedly raped. Can you tell us a little bit about this?
Yeah, that might have been one of the most extraordinary news feeds that we had through the post earthquake era. There's academics that get involved in this as well. And there was an academic study that helped feed it that claimed that women were being raped in the camps at the rate of 7% of all women per year. It's the type of rape that makes the Congo, the Eastern Congo, pale by comparison. It was the highest rape rate in the world. And in the book, I look back at the history of these so-called rape epidemics. They've appeared several times in Haiti over the years. But it's absolutely absurd. They usually appear in political context, in context of, people blaming the other political party. And in the case of Haiti, though, or of the earthquake, what we have got this, you saw this classic example of people adapting to the aid economy. Mm-hmm. So you had grassroots organizations claiming these radically high rates of rape. I mean, outright lying. You had women raped three or four times. There's always rape, but the levels they were claiming were absurd. Were easy to show that they weren't true. And many people involved, most of the feminist organizations, the most credible, like Kai Fum and SOFA, they knew, they were aware of the lies. But there was nothing they could do about it. And the reason there was nothing they could do about it is because the other NGOs, the international NGOs, were repeating these claims of these radically, 60 rapes per day in camps, one camp. The international NGOs were treating the claims in their fundraising drives. And the international press, the Associated Press, major newspapers around the world.
Miami Herald, New York Times, Washington Post, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Around the world, the Hong Kong Daily, you found it around the world, these radical claims of rape. And I get into, this again, that why we know it's not true. We actually did a study for CARE International 3 years after it, and we were able to reconstruct. We went into camps. We went into one of the most densely populated urban areas. We went to Laogan, ground zero of the earthquake, and we estimated that there were less rapes in post-earthquake Haiti than there are in any day United States. The rate was something like three times as high in the United States as the rate we estimated in post-earthquake Haiti.
And this is all detailed in figures, in stories, in great detail in The Great Haiti Humanitarian Aid Swindle, the book we're offering to you tonight for the next 15 minutes that we'll be here with Tim Schwartz, the author of the book, who has lived and worked in Haiti for the past 27 years. He knows Haiti. He knows the Dominican Republic. He's an expert in this, and he is putting the story out about how these apocalyptic pictures and images of Haiti are disseminated by those thirsting for sensational stories about hunger, suffering, and violence. Roger, I don't want to keep you. I know you are champing for a
No, I'm just thinking about how international agencies and aid missions, the more famous one like the Red Cross, Oxfam, and all of this, they are supposedly there to help people, which they do, but partially. But their main function is to sustain their own existence, to make sure that they keep going and doing this. And as Tim Schwartz was showing us, they have their local domestic accomplices who also live on the back of so-called victims by exaggerating and saying that these things happen. Because the more people who die, the more rape they can produce, the more astronomical numbers they can pop up, right, the more money they're going to receive. And the vicious cycle, right, feeds onto itself, the feedback, right, loop.
This idea of this NGO economy, can you talk a little bit more about that, Tim? How did this NGO economy displace all of the other economies Haiti had?
Well, let me say a word about what Roger just said there first about the accomplices, because it's like this positive feedback loop. At the very bottom, you have these poor people, the ones that we give the money to, the ones who are really desperate. Now, in order to participate in that aid, after they've gotten it, after they've collected the money on these exaggerations and sometimes outright lies, now the money's come for rape victims, right? Or it's come for orphans, or it's come for child slaves. So now, for the people on the ground, the real indigent people, the people who really need the aid, for them to participate in that aid, they've got to conform to being one of those victims. So in a lot of ways, you say how the NGOs have eliminated the aid. At another level, the NGOs have participated in international government programs. You know, the most famous, of course, is the U.S. Food Aid. And the U.S., we have a system to buy food from our farmers, and so to keep the price up and to support our farmers. So we have all the surplus food. It's a well-known, story now. And we distribute the food and give it to poor countries, often poor agricultural countries, who are in need of money and assistance. And we say we've given them, say $200 million, but they give it to them as food. Mm-hmm. And they force them to sell. They offer the government, okay, $200 million, we're going to give it to you in rice. We're going to give it to you in corn. And it must be sold on your local market. So, and again, most, these are countries like Congo and Haiti and Honduras, Nicaragua, countries that are agricultural countries. That's what they do, is they produce food. And when you dump food on their local market, their farmers, already extremely poor, can't make any money. They can't sell their own crops. We undercut them. This is, of course, what's happened in Haiti. They documented this in, not so much in this book, but in an earlier book, but other people have.
Travesty
as well.
In Haiti, yeah.
Yeah, travesty. So what would we done? Okay, whether we did it intentionally or we did it just because we can and because we were interested and focused on our own farmers or not, however it happened. We helped destroy the local economy.
And Tim Schwartz, can you say something about, we talked greatly, you just did, and we'll keep doing it. Talk about the disaster profiteering that's happening around those natural disasters. But we also have to say a few words about the political profiteering. How those agencies and their sponsors, like the USAIDs, the NEDs, and the states, the governments themselves, how they profit by injecting that, by penetrating further into the controls of governments, weak institutions of governments like governments in Haiti. They are already weak, but these disasters happen and they penetrate even further and control even more firmly the governments and the institutions of countries like Haiti.
That's an interesting. I mean, there's two aspects of what you're saying. I see where you're going with it. It's not something I've thought a lot about, but it's something abundantly clear. Is how the NGOs, not just the NGOs, the UN agencies, gain ground and gain turf that they can literally use to make money when they're aiding a weak government. As the government gets weaker, they get stronger. You know, the UN, of course, is the most famous case because when you have a failed state, like Congo or Haiti, they literally come in and they pay the UN to bring their people in, and everybody's making money. You know, people are making 3 and 4 times their normal salaries. You know, all the UN agencies.
Hardship pay, right?
Hardship pay. But there's another aspect of this. I mean, the first part of it too is that the NGOs themselves and the UN agencies. Again, the UN agencies function just like the NGOs. They often have participated in undermining these governments or participated in carrying out the political strategies, the political economic programs of other countries, so that you've got organizations like World Vision, which is a Protestant organization. You know, you've got CRS, Catholic Relief Services. These organizations, about half of their money in places like Haiti is coming from the U.S. government.
Mm-hmm. So these NGOs are quite a misnomer.
They're not. They're carrying out the policy, so they look like, they're supposed to be acting on behalf of the people they're helping, but they're getting their paychecks from governments that mm-hmm. have specific political programs. Again, mm-hmm. the most famous is the food aid, but you have other things. Okay, but going back to what Roger was saying, yes, they gain ground. The weaker the government, the better it is for the NGOs, the better it is for the humanitarian sector. And we began talking about the first coup that overthrew Aristide. The NGOs and the missionaries, they almost as a rule didn't like the Aristide government, and it's particularly the second time around. They became very political themselves, and they rallied behind and supported the people that were against the government at certain levels. I haven't written about that.
You're heading. It's so great, and it's so hard to end. But unfortunately, our time is really up, and we have to really thank you because this is such a fantastic book. It is so important. It should really be on your bookshelf, and we want to thank you, Tim, for coming and talking with us about it and sharing your thoughts. And I think the listeners can hear what kind of intellect is produced this. So thank you, Tim Schwartz, author of The Great Haiti Humanitarian Aid Swindle.